We're on the air. It's a Taylor Report, just like they told us. CIUT 89.5 FM, and it's Labor Day, and tomorrow you have to go to school. And we're going to be talking with an old friend, I guess that's the appropriate word, Steve Gowans, What's Left, got a great column. And I'll tell you right now, you can read Stephen Gowans, What's Left, at gowans.wordpress.com. We'll be talking to Stephen at about the halfway point. And we have other matters to talk about. Phil is here. By the way, Phil Conlon is here. How you doing, Phil?
Good afternoon, Phil.
We're going to, in the half hour leading up to Stephen Gowans, talk about a few other matters. One is, I'll just start it off by saying that it's Labor Day, in Toronto that means that they open the gates, the Queen's gates or whatever it's called, to labor. And to me, it represents a significant defeat. It's an annual celebration of the defeat of labor, of its inability to have May Day, which across Europe and across the world is a day celebrates internationalism, the idea of workers of all parts of the world share common issues. By the way, when the May Day was initiated by the labor movement, and we're talking here about the labor movement, the two principal things were the concept of internationalism, where people from leaders of workers' organizations would appear at one another's events. French workers, Italian workers, Russians would appear in Paris and talk to big crowds about the common issues, particularly the goals of, you know, decent working hours, a human life. They were talking, at the turn of the last century, the concept was, we too are part of humanity. We want to live like human beings. We're not beasts of burden. and we all of us share this. And the other matter that they were talking about in the 1890s was anti-militarism, that we should not be fighting wars with each other, because the men and women who die in those wars are working people, overwhelmingly. If you want me to throw in the word peasant, I could do that too, or farmer. But that was the why they wanted a common day, the May Days. And so here we are, it's September 1st, and we have, it's called Labor Day, and then we have warplanes raking across low-level over Toronto. To me, those are two things, there's two things very seriously wrong with that. And Phil has found a great column by Mr. Fiorito.
Joe Fiorito in the Toronto Star.
Yeah, and we're going to share that. So Phil wants to read this.
So this is the title of the article, which appeared on the weekend, is "The Air Show is Coming, Run for Your Lives." And these are the words of Joe Fiorito. "It is an ear-splitting sign of this city's immaturity that we still have such a thing. Let me quote from the recent press release. Quote, get ready to be amazed as the CF-18 Hornet rips through the sky. The crowd-favored Hornet fighter will sting you amazed with its thrilling demo," unquote. I am not responsible for the grammar up there, nor do I have any interest in being stung amazed. I reserve my amazement for the notion that an instrument of death ripping through the skies is anyone's idea of fun. Colonel Blimp, why, if it wasn't for those warplanes, we'd all be speaking German. Gott, as it were, in Himmel. Back to the press release. Quote, the C-123 provider, known as the Thunder Pig, lives up to its name, unquote. Why on earth do we want pigs thundering over Toronto of an afternoon? Don't we have enough of them at City Hall? I hear you writhing now, but there is more. Quote, since having flown at the air show during its inaugural display 65 years ago, the Harvard aircraft has smothered air show fans with smoke and noise many times since, unquote. Please spare me, my neighbors, and anyone sensible from being smothered in smoke and noise. This is the sort of stuff that appeals to teenage boys or those who suffer from arrested development, but it sort of proves my point. The air show is not so much about flight prowess as it is about scaring the wits out of people who don't have a lot of wit to spare. It also caters to the sort of people who gawk at traffic accidents or the prospect of death. You think I'm kidding? Quote, while the Beach 18 was never designed to perform Cuban eights, point rolls, and loops, this beautiful bird can do just that, unquote. In other words, the air show is selling the risk of a crash. It gets worse. Quote, some more jet noise for your listening pleasure, but of course, airshow fans, the T-33 Acemaker will bring its wicked demo of jet noise and speed to this year's lineup as the highly recognizable silhouette of this super-fast fighting bird races down the show line, unquote. That's a bit purple, never mind, but really, the T-33 Acemaker? A cute or clever name, until you were reminded that an ace is a fighter pilot credited with kills in battle. We're not talking about video game kills. We're talking kills, as in death. We celebrate that here now, do we? Makes me sick. An analogy here is kids playing with fireworks, or idiots in cars racing around a track at high speed. It's fun until it blows up in your face, or fun until some idiot gets out of his car, runs out onto the track, and gets bumped into oblivion. You like that stuff? Well, then, instead of inflicting it on me and my neighbors and terrorizing the people who live in condos along the waterfront, why don't you go to the internet and look for one of those airshow crash compilation videos? Yes, there are such things. And feast on fireballs to your heart's content without risking death here. Two final observations. In previous years, the people who run the airshow say the planes don't fly over Parkdale. Damn right they do. Finally, a lot of people will conclude that I don't, quote, support our troops, unquote, because I refuse to celebrate instruments of death or the skill required to wield them. That's absurd. I support our troops with my taxes, just like you do, and I'm in a pretty fair bracket. Odds are I support them more. And I say, time to ground the air show.
Joe Fiorito in the Toronto Star. You can you have the date on that when he was...
Well, the date was Friday the... What was Friday? The 29th?
Or the
30th. Friday the 29th. Friday the 29th of August.
Yeah. And I should have realized, of course, that the way papers are organized, mm-hmm. you just go to the Star and hit Mr. Fiorito's columns. Yeah. No, good for him. And it does stand out in contrast because at this moment we have a talk of warplanes going to Ukraine. For what purpose? You know, what is somehow it's supposedly going to help? And of course we have in the United States Senate yesterday, senators took to the airways to tell Obama that they want him to put troops into Syria, bombing. They think he's inclined to bomb, but they say that's not going to be enough. They want him to now. All the things that result from that is not discussed. Instead, it's the glamour of war at a time when they also want us to say, well, you know, let's remember World War One and World War Two, where we're talking about millions of deaths. And everybody says, oh, the war that shouldn't have happened. And if only, but the only policy that we're seeing, both in Washington and Ottawa, is a hard-boiled, cynical, sanctions, play rough with them policy. The very opposite of what one would assume you might have learned from two previous wars. World War One was also World War Two because the means by which they ended World War One were so stupid and so punitive that it led to a further explosion. I know that people would like to boil it down to a fanatical personality, et cetera, but Maynard Keynes and others said, you know, this peace agreement is guaranteed to cause a further conflict. But the other thing, they want us to say, and everybody knows these, you know, the flannel tongue guys who get up and give the speeches on big events and stand in front of monuments is, you know, we have to learn and we have to remember. That day's editorial and that day's headlines don't reflect learning at all. And they certainly don't reflect the concept of caution and say, well, how can we talk and how can we avoid and how can we compromise so that there is no outbreak. Instead, I read leaders in Europe who are talking rather cavalier, in a cavalier way, about what is, you know, what might happen here. And forgetting something, there's a whole bunch of, we now have what they call a new grade of weaponry, which is going to dramatically alter what you think war is, if you get around to read about it post-war, but you probably won't. So there's a kind of madness that has drifted in while we're forced to go through this ritual of pretending we care about those who've fallen in the past. And, of course, always speaking in their name. Oh, you know, he would want us to do this. I wouldn't know how they would have such ideas. I'm glad that Mr. Fiorito wrote that. I hope that we get some at people actually addressing the problems. I mentioned before how Labor Day should properly be marked. And I want to go back to say again that in London, England, is where they organized the first big May Days. And it was out as a result of international organizations. And in 1890, they had a demonstration at Hyde Park. Hyde Park, it was on a Sunday, by the way. It was not on May 1st. They tried to have it, maybe they couldn't get people to, you know, walk off the job, let's put it frankly. And in France, they did, by the way. The French was, you know, I guess you have to thank Robespierre and Danton and all those guys, because the French actually said, okay, May Day is it, and they went out. But in London, they had a demonstration on May 4th, and it was attended by a minimum of 200,000 people were there, and they had special wagons. They addressed the crowds from wagons. One of the speakers was George Bernard Shaw. They had some wagons where the speakers were foreign. They called them foreign because these were guys from different parts of the world, and they spoke in German, I think, largely German, and some Italians were there, Frenchmen, but they couldn't. Of course, they didn't have they didn't have a system that could have reached a crowd anyway. So they would break. They had these wagons. I think there were about 10 of them. One of the speakers was a young woman named Eleanor Marks, and she gave a really nice speech. You can find it. And she said they wanted to end unemployment on both ends of the social spectrum. She said unemployment amongst the poor. We want to end unemployment. And we want to end unemployment amongst the rich. We want a society in which everyone works.
Oh, my God, anything but that. You mean they might have to work?
Yeah. Well, by the way, I would tell you, the class conscious on that end, class conscious, very high. Yeah. And they definitely said what you said. They were thinking, whoa, this is scary. But the speeches were against militarism. And as she ended her speech with lines from Shelley, which are, rise like lions after slumber, in unvanquishable number, shake off your chains to earth like dew, which in sleep had fallen on you, ye are many, they are few. By all accounts, she was one of the most popular speakers. She was a trained actress, had a great voice, but just try to picture that. That's more than 200,000 people, and the principal speaker, one of the principal speakers, is quoting Shelley to them. And then compare our great advancement where we reach 2014, and we have warplanes flying over, and the police are escorting the labor unions at a very early hour so that no one will see them into the CNE. So we have a lot of I would like us to resurrect the ideas and keep alive the ideas of May 1st and ask how it mainly a post-war thing. It was a part of the Cold War was to make sure the labor movement was no longer associated with overseas workers' movements. And you're listening to the Taylor Report. It's CIUT 89.5 FM. And you can write to us, Taylor, at CIUT.FM. We are also we have Facebook / The Taylor Report. And and we do like to hear from you. And there is a website, taylor-report.com. I sometimes don't say hyphen, and so I assume we leave some folks. I have some news, and on this program we often talk about Rwanda, and listeners may remember that some months back we spoke to the daughter of a Rwandan exile politician, Mr. Karegeya, who was strangled on New Year's Day in South Africa. And Mr. Karegeya was aligned with his family is, with General Nyamwasa, a major figure in modern Rwanda. He was a major RPF officer, close colleague of the president of Rwanda today, Paul Kagame, who is, of course, really a general who's now wears civilian clothes. General Nyamwasa broke with Paul Kagame, had to flee the country. And in 2010, an attempt was made on his life. He was wounded twice. He fought off his attackers. Some were arrested. And that was 2010. Now, there's been a verdict, and I have not seen reporting here, but there in South Africa, there was a conviction of four individuals. Three of them were Tanzanian nationals. One was a Rwandan. According to the judge, the assassination was organized in Rwanda. I get the impression he was trying to avoid talking about a government, although if one remembers the cold-blooded reactions of that government to the death of Mr. Karegeya, who was also a former RPF leader, some of the comments like Karegeya is a dog, you die like a dog, this is a foreign minister talking, and other people in the leadership indicating, yes, they were highly sympathetic to the murderers of Mr. Karegeya and those who made an attempt on the life of General Nyamwasa. By the way, since that initial attack on Nyamwasa, there have been two further attacks. There have been other people now arrested I hope the word will get out, because I don't see the Globe and Mail or the Toronto Star or the New York Times helping us here. But there have been four convictions of the individuals who attempted to murder General Nyamwasa. So I assume there'll be further on that score. And I want to make sure our listeners knew that. We talked about the situation in Ferguson, and we have spoken on this program with Ishmael Reed, the poet. We had hoped to talk to him today. He's got a column in the Counterpunch. Did you see that column, Phil?
It
has a nice title, something to do with the bad apple theory, you know, that it's just a couple of guys, he underlined. He told some personal stories. His take, and I urge you to go to it would be the August 29th edition of Counterpunch magazine. You'll find it there, article by Ishmael Reed. He says that he lives in a community in Oakland, a very large black community. They've had, of course, instances very much like that one at Ferguson, where an unarmed black youth has some kind of altercation with police officers, usually for nothing other than they want to search him or they're treating him like a suspect, and then he ends up shot. This has happened many times. And they do have a lot of Oakland is a city that experiences a lot of unemployment, racial discrimination, a lot of problems. And so Mr. Reed belongs to a community organization, a kind of crime fighters thing, where the neighbors have meetings and talk about how to make their community safe. And he says, occasionally we see someone or groups or gangs that are a problem. He says, and we call the police. He says, very often they don't come at all. They do not show up, even though this is black community leaders saying, you know, we have a problem here with drugs and it looks like maybe a violent group, and they don't come at all. But he said the other day, and I'm talking about Ishmael Reed, one of America's and one of the world's best-known poets, actually. He's written operas, written plays, novels, winner of many, many literary prizes. So he said he went for a walk with a friend in the Oakland Cemetery. He was just, I suppose, like a lot of us, interested in history. You look at, you know. So he said the police came and wanted to know what he was doing. And he said he hadn't been in the cemetery for 5 minutes before they arrived. Someone called. So he said, a black man walking in this cemetery, which I guess wasn't a black neighborhood, was a cemetery. He said, what do you suppose they thought he was going to steal? Bodies? But this happened to him. The concluding point that I took away from the article, and we'll talk about it in the future. Indeed, we really anticipate talking to Ishmael himself about this, but he made a nice commentary on the treatment of the Ferguson story, and his thesis is that they're attempting to turn this into black-white. And he says, when in fact Native Americans are victims of shootings and violence that, as we know, go way, way back. We have everything comparable right here in Canada, where women disappeared, and also we had the treatment of children, Native children, by the very best of our churches and, you know, the finest citizens we can produce ran schools where children were beaten and every other terrible thing happened to them, and that we all know the records are being... we won't be able to keep the records. We did the inquiry, but best that nobody knows. That's maintaining traditions. So he said Native Americans are killed at a disproportionately high rate. Of course, they're also in prisons to a high, disproportionately high rate, similar to black Americans. And he said also this is true of Latino Americans. And he says, here's a, CNN runs a poll, and they put the, on the screen, it says, 67% of white Americans believe that the police are doing adequate, non-discriminatory, you know, satisfactory work. And 34% of black Americans don't, you know, think that. So in other words, you have a clear line. He said they're leaving somebody out, Latino Americans and Native Americans. And he said, let's go back and remind them, because it's been discussed widely in American culture. White Americans are only 50%, if that, of the population. So why don't we have an interview, why don't we have a poll reflecting what the 50% think? Well, why did they turn it into black? He said to him, this, you know, this clearly indicates that still this game of let's get you to fight him or not to like him, etc. No, and break down solidarity. So I thought it was a very important thesis, and I'm glad to that he published that, and you can find that in Counterpunch. It's an online magazine, as you would know, and it's Ishmael Reed on August the 29th. He had that thing about apples in the headline. That's one we always hear. Oh, a few bad apples, right? When actually, if you have a policy, like in the case of Ferguson, Missouri, where 53 police officers and 50 of them are white and the community is black, you're not talking about apples. You're talking about some kind of a policy. So I would hope that we would do something about that. I remind you, shortly we'll be talking in about 4 minutes, I think. We will be calling Stephen Gowans. His article is at, his column is called What's Left. It's gowans.wordpress.com. And he has written about this phenomenon of the possible war with a bombing of attack on Syria. I'll just remind you, too, that since we're also, this is the, we're in 200 years from this date, and the War of 1812. If you don't recall, the Canadian government was making a big thing about the War of 1812. It seems to have died out. Are you seeing those ads?
No, it's gone. The story is just like disappeared, right?
Yeah, it started in 12,
you're right.
But it is now, and the war went on.
Well, sure. This is the 20th anniversary of the British shelling the harbor of Baltimore, right? And this is right.
Close to it,
close to it, right? Well, it happened in the year 1814, right?
Yeah, yeah. And as a matter of fact, the reason I think we should mention on this program is that the Harper government has talked about it a great deal and nation building, etc. There were no Canadians involved in the talks in Ghent. And the talks were beginning right at this time in 1814, and there were no native representation. So we see, this talk about, we're defending Canada. So there were no Canadians. And sadly and really tragically, Native Americans were not even told about these talks. And yet they in terms of casualties and lost territory, they came out the losing the most, and so it's important to know that. Yeah, there are three big battles. One is the Battle of Plattsburgh is coming up. That's when the Governor General of Canada invaded upstate New York, and they suffered a defeat at Plattsburgh, and then they attacked Fort Henry and suffered a defeat. The biggest loss, actually, was of the commander of the British Army, Mr. Ross. He was killed 10 days after he had burned Washington. He was outside showing leadership, and someone shot him. He's buried in Halifax.